Matthew 6, 19 through 24. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money.
Okay, good morning. How's everybody doing? Okay, I'm glad you're well. We're making our way through the Sermon on the Mount. And in these verses, very famous verses from Jesus, Jesus teaches us about one of the driving forces of the American dream, one of the driving forces of our culture, and whether we like it or not, or admit it or not, probably one of the driving forces of every single one of our hearts, money. One of the things pastors should never talk about. But I'm breaking that rule today because we come to where Jesus talks about it, and Jesus talks about money all the time. P.T. Anderson's masterful film, There Will Be Blood, portrays this spirit of the pursuit of money. It portrays capitalism at its very worst. The film stars Daniel Day-Lewis, one of the great actors of our age. He plays a man named Daniel Plainview, who is an oil prospector, who moves from where he once lived in the Midwest to California and seeks his fortune in oil. And he savagely wipes out everyone in his path, including people in his own family, to get what he is after. It's a movie that's not for the faint of heart. Many things about it are brilliant. It reveals to us how humans tend to work. And in one very poignant scene, Plainview is speaking at night while sitting on his porch step to his half-brother as they relax after a long day of work. And he looks at his half-brother and says, I have a competition in me. I want no one else to succeed. I hate most people. I look at people and I see nothing worth liking. I want to earn enough money that I can get away from everyone. And as the film progresses, that's exactly what Plainview does. And he finds himself at the end surrounded by opulent wealth everywhere and all by himself. I don't want to spoil the brutal ending, but suffice to say it is pretty tragic. The film teaches that spending your life going after earthly treasure is no way to live. That's the message of Jesus Christ here. But he adds more. Spending your life going after heavenly treasure is a worthwhile, foolproof investment. As I mentioned, we're in the middle of Matthew. And as we make our way through Jesus' most famous collection of teachings here called the Sermon on the Mount, let me just catch us up to speed if you haven't been with us in a few weeks or if you're new today. Last week, in the first half of chapter 6, we saw that Jesus shifts his focus. In chapter 5, he focuses mainly on our behavior, on our actions, which Jesus is very concerned about. In chapter 6, he begins to focus on our intentions, our motivations. In verse 1, he said, beware of practicing your righteousness so that other people will see you. Don't be a hypocrite, Jesus said. He's concerned with our motivations in why we do what we do. And he says, instead, we're to have a single-minded devotion to our Heavenly Father, and that our Heavenly Father will reward our faithful labor in his kingdom. That's what we saw last week. And now Jesus continues to speak about this sort of single-mindedness. And here's what he's asking you right now, and he's asking me too. What is your goal? What are you after in life? What is your treasure? And it's so important for all of us to listen to Jesus' words here and to examine our hearts and to examine our actions, because all of us are working towards some goal. All of us are serving some master. Bob Dylan has that song. You've got to serve somebody. All of us, whether we admit it or not, are serving somebody. The question is, who is it? Or what is it? Is our life being spent to gain something that will last? Or are we wasting our life away trying to accumulate things that are going to perish? Let's look at these verses together. And I want to ask three questions for myself and for you as we hear Jesus' word. Question one, where are your securities? Where are your securities? Look at what Jesus says in verse 19. He gives us a really stark contrast, like the master teacher he is, with two simple commands. Verse 19, do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth. And then verse 20, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And listen, this is one of those instances where Jesus means exactly what most of us think that means the first time we read it. Don't spend your life accumulating or attempting to accumulate resources for yourself. Don't spend your life trying to get more money, more stuff, a bigger house, a nicer car, a larger and more diversified portfolio. Don't look for meaning in this. That's what Jesus means. Why not? Well, he gives two reasons. He says, first, treasure on earth is prone to destruction from moth and rust. And secondly, treasure on earth is prone to theft by people breaking in and stealing. Treasure on earth is not secure. So it is foolish to put all of our eggs in that basket. That's his point. Now listen to me, my friends. Jesus is not saying here that it's wrong to plan financially, that it's wrong to save money, nor is Jesus saying that it's wrong to have wealth or to have nice things. That's not what he's saying, okay? He is saying that we should not put our security in accumulation of worldly treasure. And I think that if we're honest, we do this all the time. Isn't it telling that we call investments securities? That we call the little boxes that we store important things in safes? Our hearts are all wired to seek security in earthly treasure. The equation that we tend to live by is more money equals more stability. In recent years, as a lot of you probably know, we've seen the rise of cryptocurrencies. Most famously, Bitcoin. And one of the reasons that currencies like Bitcoin have become so popular, at least were popular maybe 3 or 4 years ago, especially among a certain brand of investor who wants to avoid government interference, is because cryptocurrency has been seen as much more secure than traditional currencies. Don't send me an email if I butcher this, okay? But as far as I can tell, your unique link on the blockchain allegedly guarantees that your investment is safe and that you're the one that owns it. However, this week, cybersecurity services provider Kaspersky released a report on risks associated with cryptocurrency use. The report is called Crypto Threats 2023, so it's very recent with new data. They surveyed 20,000 American adults and found that 25% of the respondents overall owned cryptocurrency or some other digital asset. Now listen to this. Of that one quarter of people that own cryptocurrency, a third of all crypto owners surveyed reported having crypto stolen. And another third reported being victims of scams, identity theft, theft of payment details, and loss of account access. The average value of assets stolen was $97,583. Earthly treasure can be stolen, even treasure that's not even real. It's just zeros and ones. And earthly treasure can vanish in an instant. How many of you saw the news this week about what happened in my home, the Panhandle? 750,000 acres of God's country burned. The fire that started right at the border of the uppermost part of Texas was about 100 miles wide. It basically went from the border of Texas and Oklahoma all the way to the border of Texas and New Mexico, and at about 60 to 70 mile an hour winds sent it south. And I talked to one of my friends this week who lives in Pampa, and he was telling me that he rushed on Tuesday night to a couple of members of the church he's a part of's homes to find that their homes were surrounded by flames, no more than 30 yards away from their houses. And the people in these homes were having to decide, if we can only fill the back seat of our Ford sedan with our possessions, what are we going to take? Because they faced the real loss of property. By God's grace, none of their homes were destroyed. But that's a moth and rust moment, isn't it? We can't guarantee that any earthly treasure is secure. And so Jesus says it's really unwise to place our trust in it. It's foolish to rely on it for safety or meaning or purpose in life. And listen, even if no one steals your money, even if your money isn't destroyed by a fire or moth or rust, cheerful moment here. We're all going to die one day. We're all going to die. And we can't take our treasure with us. King Tut tried. He left it all in his tomb with him. And that hasn't worked out so well for him last time I checked. In fact, several years ago, I read this week, that construction workers were laying a foundation for a building in the city of Pompeii, where 2,500-ish years ago, there was a huge volcanic eruption from Mount Vesuvius. And these construction workers, they found the corpse of a woman who must have been fleeing from the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, but was caught in a rain of hot ashes and killed. And the woman's hands clutched jewels. And the jewels had been almost perfectly preserved, in excellent condition. She had the jewels, but death had stolen everything else. That's the bottom line. For all of us, worldly treasure isn't a wise investment because worldly treasure isn't something we can take with us beyond this life. That's what Jesus is getting at. However, he also tells us that there is such a thing as a good investment. Did you catch it? He says you should spend your time and your energy pursuing certain goals, storing up treasure, but treasure, he says, in heaven. Why? Verse 20, because there neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves there don't break in and steal. This heavenly treasure, Jesus says, is what we should live for. It's what we should strive to accumulate. So a very important question is, what is heavenly treasure? What does it look like to invest in treasure that is heavenly? Heavenly treasure is anything that advances kingdom causes in the world. It's anything that advances kingdom causes in the world. Heavenly treasure is, and seeking it, is using our resources to advance God's agenda and to advance God's gospel in this world. So storing up heavenly treasure is giving to the poor. It is tithing to your church. It is investing in kingdom projects, and so on and so on. Jesus says this is a worthwhile investment because it will last. In a very real way, all of these things are going to pay dividends. Now, we, if we've been around church for a while, tend to spiritualize this away. And we tend to think that heavenly treasure is just like my relationship with Jesus, which is certainly part of it. But when we think in terms of the new world God is ushering in, when we think in terms that the life we live on this earth is a vast or a tiny speck on the vast timeline of our lives eternally, I want you to consider that God's new world is going to show the return on dividends, the return on investment, the dividends of all of the things that you give to in this world that advance Jesus' kingdom. Some of you, because of your giving, might allow for someone to hear the good news of Jesus and receive him in faith. You will meet that person in God's new world. Some of you, because of your generosity, are able to provide care for those who are beleaguered or bereaved or hurting or malnourished in the world. That is going to show up in God's kingdom. These investments are worth it. That's Jesus' point. So listen, where are your securities? The bottom line way to answer that question is to look at how you spend your money. I know you want to get around it, and I want to get around it, but that's the way. And if you examine your life, and if you don't like what you see, I want to show you verse 21. Look at verse 21. Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, we tend to read that, if we've been around the Bible a little bit, as if Jesus is saying, where your heart is, there your treasure will be. In other words, we tend to think Jesus is saying, you give to what you love. But that is not what Jesus says. That's true, by the way, but it's not what Jesus says. He does not say, where your heart is, there your treasure will be. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. What's the point? The point is, if you spend a lot of money on your backyard, protecting it from mosquitoes, and by the way, if you know how to do that, come talk to me afterwards. If you've spent a lot of money investing in making your backyard beautiful, you're going to spend more time there and you're going to enjoy it more. If you buy season tickets to Baylor football, which I would probably discourage you from doing, speaking of earthly treasure being a bad investment, but if you were to do that, and you spend 6 to 8 Saturdays a year in Waco, tailgating and going to a Baylor game, you're going to love Baylor football more. If you invest significant assets in one publicly traded company, you're going to follow what happens with that company and care about their returns more than you would otherwise. Treasure follows heart, yes, but Jesus here says heart follows treasure. The way you grow out of placing your trust in earthly treasure is by beginning to invest in heavenly treasure now. Well, I don't like doing that very much. I'd rather have earthly treasure. I know you don't like it. Neither do I. That's why Jesus says you should start doing it now, because the way you learn to love heavenly treasure more, the way your heart's going to go there, is when you give to it. How can you become more generous? How can you become more open-hearted? How can you really honestly answer the question, my security lies in things that will last? You can do it by right now beginning to practice the way of Jesus, specifically when it comes to generosity. That's what he's saying. Where are your securities? Question 2, how well can you see? How well can you see? Look at what Jesus does, verse 22. He uses this really strange image, at least to us. I think that the ancient culture, we miss something here, and it's hard to really understand what he's getting at. It's the image of an eye being the lamp of the body, he says. And Jesus is trying to illustrate his point. What he's saying is that if someone has a healthy eye, as he calls it, an eye that is able to see well, then that allows the entire person to flourish. And conversely, if someone has a blind eye, a dark eye, he calls it a bad eye, then that brings trouble for the whole body. So Jesus says in verse 23, if then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Here's what Jesus means. An inordinate desire for earthly treasure, an inordinate desire for money or possessions, has power over the way you see everything. Love of money makes our eye bad. And if the eye is bad, that's bad for all of who we are. How does this work? Greed, and that's what this is, love of money is greed. Greed gives you a bad eye in that it blinds you to the fact that you're greedy. Tim Keller tells a story about when he was teaching a Bible study to a group of men in the financial district in New York in the early 90s. And this particular Bible study was on the traditional 7 deadly sins. You may be familiar with those. Lust, anger, envy, and greed. One of the 7 deadly sins. And the night before Tim was going to teach this study, his wife, Kathy, asked him, what are you teaching on tomorrow? And he said, I'm teaching on greed. And she said, that's going to be the worst attended of all of them. And he's like, how dare you? You know, no, it's not. This is going to be amazing attendance. Everyone wants to hear me teach. And as usual, Kathy, his wife, was correct. Almost no one came. And it wasn't because they were offended or hated the idea of greed. It's because none of them thought it was relevant to their lives. Greedy people don't ever hardly know they're greedy. We're not like that with lust. We don't think, you're not my wife. You know? We're not like that with anger. We know when we're angry, but greed has the capacity to blind us to the fact that we're greedy because it darkens our eye. Here's another way that this plays out, that living to accumulate earthly treasure blinds us. The jobs that we take sometimes have nothing to do with what we're good at or what we love. We take jobs because of the pay, and that's it. Maybe you've never taken a job and thought, hey, is this work actually going to help this world? Is this job going to make my community a better place? Is it going to make my city a healthier place to live? We never consider that oftentimes because our eye is dark. All we consider is how much is this going to pay me? Maybe we're blind in that we never ask questions of ourselves, nor do we allow anyone in our lives to ask us questions like, do we really need to spend this much money on clothing? Do we really need to spend that much money on this vacation? On that app with in-game purchases to beat the bad guy, you have to pay $3, you know? And then you have to pay $3 more to beat the next bad guy. And then you spent $700 on this one little game before you know it. We don't ask those questions. Because we can always find someone in our lives who spends more. And so what we do, and what I do, is we say, they went on a $10,000 vacation, so I can go on a $5,000 vacation. Now, listen, it might be totally fine for you to do that. It might be totally fine for you to do that, to spend that. But do we even ask the question? Probably not. Why not? Because our eye is not healthy. Does this resonate with you? Jesus means that anytime we think to ourselves, this topic is probably not a problem for me, watch out. Living for earthly treasure, accumulation of wealth, greed, it darkens every part of our lives as a bad eye affects every part of the body. So how well can you see? Last question. Who's your master? This is one of Jesus' most famous sayings. Verse 24. And rightly so. No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money. Again, the big picture point here is that Jesus is asking us to have undivided loyalty. He wants all of us. Do you know that about Jesus? Jesus wants your heart, all of it. He wants all of your lives. He wants all of your devotion. He wants all of your allegiance. Jesus has no time for you to give him a part of your life like a piece of a pie and then go on your merry way pretending he's just a side issue. He has nothing to do with that and wants nothing to do with that. He wants all of you because he is your master. That's the bottom line. And we can't avoid it when we read his teaching. He saves us out of sin and death by his grace in the gospel. He brings poor in spirit people like you and like me into his kingdom of mercy. And then he asks us in response to follow his good and better way. And you cannot do that. You cannot follow his way and follow the way of money. You cannot love God and love money. You cannot serve God and serve money. The language he uses here is really strong. The verb there is dunamai, from which we get our word dynamite. It refers to ability. We are not able to do both. You cannot and I cannot be on two roads at the same time. The road to Jesus and the road to money go in opposite directions. So who is your master? Who are you living for? Who are you serving? And how can you tell? Let's ask a few diagnostic questions. I know this is hard. And then we're going to wrap up. It's critical that we see ourselves rightly. The Bible is a mirror that reflects our own hearts back to us, especially in the area of treasure. If we're going to grow up into who Jesus is calling us to be, we must understand our hearts on this issue. So three questions, then we're done. One, are you envious? Are you envious? How do you react to wealthy people? We all know people who have more than we do. It's one of the things about living in a capitalist. We're not in like 1393, where everyone subsists on the same piece of land and everyone is the same level of income. We live in a modern capitalistic economy, which is a great thing. But one of the reasons, one of the things that causes is that all of us know people who are 10x wealthier than we are. And so when you walk into their house, or when you hear about something lavish that they did, do you think, man, if I could do that, my life would be better? If I could fix my house like this, I would feel safer. If I could just take as much time off as they do, I would not feel so anxious. I wouldn't be so overwhelmed. Do you know what that is, my friends, my dear friends? That is envy. It's envy. And it's a lie. It's a lie. It's the evil one tricking you into thinking that your heart will be satisfied with just a bit more. John D. Rockefeller, famous 19th century American businessman, when asked in a press conference, how much money is enough, gave the response, just a little bit more. Are you envious? Second question, are you disdainful? Are you disdainful? What do I mean? Some of us don't react with envy towards people who we know are rich. We react with disdain. Same image. You walk into a wealthy person's home, or someone who at least is wealthier than you. Or you hear about some lavish trip that someone who's wealthier than you went on, and you don't think, wow, I wish I could have that. You think, how dare they spend that kind of money on something so fleeting? Don't they listen to Jesus? Earthly treasure and yada, 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 yada. How dare they do that or buy that or live in that or drive that? Every time I see a Porsche, I think this. I'm sorry. I don't think there's any Porsches here, but if there are, I'm sorry. That's my confession. Who drives that? Sorry. Confession of sins later. But it's now for me. What is that showing us? Here's what it's showing us. Money has just as much of control over your heart as if you were envious. Your eye is just as dark. You're actually feeling like you're superior to wealthy people instead of inferior to wealthy people. It's a sign money's still your master. Last question. Are you generous? I mean, this is the most important question, my friends. It really is, because it is the most critical acid test for where our hearts are with money. And where your hearts are with money is one of the fundamental ways you can know where your hearts are with Jesus. Do you give money away? Now, the question I always get here, I've been around long enough as a pastor to know the question, how much, Luke? How much? Should I tithe pre-tax or post-tax? Should I tithe at all? Is that still binding? Those are fair questions. And let me say, yes, the tithe is a good rule. It's a good starting point, but it seems to me like the tenor of Scripture and the tenor of Jesus' teaching on this. And by the way, Jesus talks about money more than any other social issue, more than he talks about sex, more than he talks about politics, more than he talks about power. If I taught on money as much as Jesus did, it would be about 1 in 3 sermons, and you would probably find a new church. Jesus talks about money all the time. And the tenor of his teaching on money is sacrificial generosity. Do you give enough money away to the church, to the poor, to other gospel causes that it costs you something? That's what it means to be generous. For some of you, 10% won't even come close to doing that. For others, it will. But the question is not percentage, the question is heart. Do you give up earthly treasure in order to invest in heavenly treasure? That's the question Jesus asks. That's the barometer for generosity. I want to tell you a story. I've told it before. It's one of my favorite illustrations. It's from a guy named Martin Lloyd-Jones, who is a 20th century Welsh preacher. And he tells a story about a farmer who came into his home one day while his wife was making breakfast and had just great joy, was super happy. And he said, honey, our best cow has given birth to twin calves. We were only expecting one baby calf, but we get two. One calf is red and the other calf is white. And he said, you know what? I've been led by the Lord to dedicate one of these two calves to the Lord. And we're going to raise them together. And then when the time comes to sell them, we'll keep the proceeds from one calf and we'll give all the proceeds for the second calf to the church. And his wife said, that sounds like a great idea, honey. I'm glad you feel led by the Lord to do that. Which calf is God's and which calf of the church? And he says, we don't need to figure that out right now. We'll just raise them and treat them exactly the same. And when they're grown up, we'll give one to the church and we'll keep one for ourselves. So some time goes by. A couple months later, same situation. The wife is standing in the kitchen making breakfast, and the farmer comes on, and he just looks distraught, ashen-faced, sad, despondent. And his wife turns and looks at him and says, honey, what is wrong? And the farmer said, honey, God's calf died. I'm so sorry to tell you. The Lord's calf is dead. It's always God's calf that dies. Unless we're storing up for ourselves treasure in heaven. Unless God is our master, not money. Why is that story so resonant? Why does God's calf die? It's because we think, finishing with this, that in our foolishness, money is a better master than God. That is a lie. Money enslaves us. Love of money. And those who have vast storehouses of earthly treasures can be those who are most deeply in bondage to money. Money does not free you. In fact, the love of money is a God who always demands more. How much is enough? Just a bit more. But Jesus doesn't demand more. Jesus gives us more. Of himself. In fact, Jesus emptied all of his treasure. Jesus didn't just tithe his blood to you. He gave you all of himself, all of his blood, all of his treasure to make us his own. He loved us to the very end, even through death. And he has proven that he is worth following. He's a better master. And as his people, when we follow him, we find that his rule over us is gentle and kind and merciful and caring. He provides for you in a way that money never can and never will. And he allows us to continue to use our resources and invest our treasures, but in things that last. Who's your master? There's only one option. It's money or it's Jesus. Jesus is better. By far.